You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Anthony Wall wins the Aberdeen Asset Management Paul Lawrie match play just 16 years since the Englishman's last European Tour victory.
It's funny, you know, the other one in 2000 felt like yesterday sometimes. Oh, it just feels amazing. I cannot tell you how happy I am.
And we'll speak exclusively to Anthony Wall shortly, as well as tournament host Paul Lawrie. So stay with us as we review all the action from Archerfield, and we'll also look ahead to the Olympic men's golf tournament in Rio, where Henrik Stenson is going for gold after a tremendous season on the European Tour.
Got some nice trophies in the game of golf, and I managed to get my hands on a few of them, and I think it would look pretty tidy on the trophy shelf with an Olympic medal next to it.
Good day to you, Richard.
Hello, how are you, Robert?
Well, you sound slightly flat. Is that because you've been travelling a lot?
Do I sound flat?
Yes, a bit of a flat opener there.
No.
You're normally more perky.
Been a little, we got a little blown out yesterday at Archerfield, but all good fun, all came to an end, and Anthony Wall is a very happy man.
Windy day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very difficult, and I thought that Alex Norren, who liked a birdie early on and an eagle in those first six holes on that Archerfield course. When he started birdie, and especially with the birdie he made on the second against Anthony Wall from behind a tree, with fir cone in front of the ball, chipped it back down, four iron from 245 yards on the green and rolled it in. Anthony Wall must have thought, oh dear.
Two out after two, and the previous 2 days he was seven under par through six holes, and then he birdied the first three holes in the semi-final.
I thought, you watched the way he played, Robert, most of his irons never left the flag, especially before the wind came along, and I thought he was going to be your winner.
How about 16 years and 204 days between victories? The longest wait in European Tour history, Richard, for Anthony Wall. That's an amazing gap.
It's a huge gap. I know he had real problems, you know, he had a real problem with his hip. And I think he was probably thinking, you know, that the time has come. A little bit like, you know, Søren Kjeldsen got to 40 and thought, is that it? And then all of a sudden picked up the Irish Open and kicked on from there. And hopefully for Anthony, you know, he's stuck in. He's earned a few euros out of it, over 7 million.
We got to 40 and thought, was that it? And it was.
And it was. And then
was.
We stopped.
Yeah.
We stopped.
Do you know Anthony's won more money than Seve in his career?
He hasn't won as many tournaments, but that's won a fair few quid.
That's something he'd like to address. And maybe with this win, with the one-up win over Alex Norren, a little springboard. We always look for little signs, Richard, don't we? A little springboard.
Well, they say life begins at 40. He's 41 now. But he needed it, though, Robert. He was 127th on the race to Dubai. He's leapt right up to 73rd now. And outside the top 200 in the world rankings, he's down now to about 139th or 37th, I think it is. So, you know, it might be a little springboard. Certainly, his next tournament, I think, is going to be Czech Republic. So I would expect to see him do fairly well. Who knows? Give him a nice week off and off you go again.
So Anthony Wall, two down after two, didn't start well. It was so important he just found a way to hang in and stay in the match, and he did that.
He did it straight after two holes, Robert. He hit a great shot into the third because, you know, he'd have been thinking, I'm going to get a bit of a belting here if I'm not careful, because he's 18 holes. You know, it's not a marathon, it's a sprint. Third hole, he played a lovely little shot. Pin was tight right over the bunker, and he pitched it just over the bunker to about 8 feet, 9 feet left of the hole, downhill left to right putt. Norah had missed his birdie to his relief. That was a huge putt for Anthony Wall, one on the third to bring it back.
And then he birdied six, the par five, and then birdies were hard to come by, and he got one up. They both birdied 16, and then on the 17th hole, tough par three into the wind, Alex Norren hit the better tee shot, went for his birdie two, and how it didn't go in, it spun right out the hole.
Yeah, no, that was, not only did he thought it was in, all the spectators standing around the green thought it was in.
Maybe that's, you know, that was the moment where Anthony watched out and thought, do you know what? Maybe it's my day.
Well, you don't know. I mean, he would still be pretty nervous. I remember listening to his interview yesterday. He said he was actually more nervous watching Norren over that 10-footer on the last. That was the most nervous he'd been all day.
Because he's very close to the line, isn't he?
So close, yeah. And not only that, you know, you've got no control over it, have you? You're relying totally on somebody else to make sure they don't read it right.
Hands behind his back, both fingers crossed. Toes crossed.
Well, he'd probably be saying, oh, come on, Alex, you've had five wins. Come on, just let me notch up number two, please. And he did. And you never know with Anthony. He's got a sort of I think you said, Rob, he's got a bit of an old-fashioned sort of swing, but it does the job.
It's a swish. It's an old-fashioned swish of the club head. But do you remember Ted Dexter, cricketer, England cricketer, the way he used to play, that kind of elegant, tall finish?
I do remember
Anthony's
that,
got a similar sort of balanced, tall, sweeping, swishy finish.
What he did have yesterday, more than anything else, was, or over the week, was a brilliant short game. hold out very well.
Well, I think, Richard, it's time to talk to last week's champion now, the Aberdeen Asset Management Paul Laurie match play winner was, of course, Anthony Wall. And Anthony, quite a gap between now and the last win. Quite a number of months.
Yes, I don't know the exact number of months, but it was certainly 16 years and something. But no, it was a fantastic day, fantastic week overall, and it was so enjoyable, it really was.
I know you've been on the European Tour for a long, long time, and that in itself takes some doing because the standards are very high. But had you sort of given up on the hope of winning again?
I think I had probably given up this year because my body was starting to struggle. Last year I played so beautifully, I was desperate to win, and it didn't come. So I did think maybe my time had gone. But you guys know this, it's all about sticking in and keep going. And you never know what's around the corner, and luckily it was my turn.
Now, you talk about sticking in. I'll tell you what, well, I was doing the commentary on it yesterday, and that start, he birdied the first. I mean, I think he birdied that 5 out of 6 times. And that birdie he made on the second, you must have thought, oh, this isn't going to be too pleasant a day here.
No, I was a bit worried about the old dog licence. So I was happy to win the third and then make a few pars and nick one again at 6 to get back to all square. And then I felt I had a real chance because I think I took the wind out of his sails a little bit because I think he expected, you know, 2 up after 2, he's thinking, well, maybe 3 or 4 up after 9, and that didn't quite happen for him.
How difficult a day was it?
I can honestly say I probably only ever played in wind that strong probably 3 times before. One was in Ireland as an amateur, and as a couple were actually probably in Qatar. So, you know, and I've been doing it a long time. So it was a shock to have that much wind, but we were prepared for it, and we were told the day before by the tournament director, Mike Stewart. So it wasn't such a shock as normally when you wake up on a Sunday and things are completely different. But I think the main thing was for all of us, the fact was the wind was the same direction as it had been all week. It was stronger, but at least the course was playing the same way.
So how does that change how you view the rest of this year and the rest of your career? How does it change it all?
Well, the main thing for me is it gives me a chance to, I wouldn't say relax, but it gives me a chance to sit down, take 5 minutes. The year's been very stressful. We've had a death in the family. My back's been in pieces. And every day just seems like you're chasing your tail. You know, you boys have played on tour for many years. You know what that feels like. It's a tough feeling because you go away and all you see is young chaps doing really well and not a care in the world. And we're battling the 8 ball. So it just gives me a chance to relax a bit more and hopefully shine and keep doing what I'm doing.
Well, so moving on from here, after that brilliant win yesterday, Anthony, what's the plan? What's left for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's quite a long season. It goes right through now. So I think I've got a pretty much 10 tournaments in about 11 weeks, so I might miss the odd one here or there just to split them up, because playing more than 4 in a row is quite tough these days for 40-odd-year-olds. But, and then hopefully the final series and the race to Dubai at the end. That would be the absolute dream. You know, being 127th in the Order of Merit in August, you know, you think the race to Dubai are out of the question. So that's back on the agenda, and hopefully I can finish with a real bang towards the end.
Isn't it funny though, Anthony? You know, you're outside the top 120, and it's, you can see yourself just ebbing away to nothing at the end of the season, and then... having big decisions to make. Now your decisions are, which tournaments do I play to maximise to get into the race to the bye in the final series?
It's incredible, isn't it? You know, how one day can change your life that much. And that's the pressure you're under. But I think to survive on the European Tour, you know, how long their longevity with pros, and the average is 3 years, you've got to block those sort of feelings out and embrace the fact that you have that chance and you have to take it. Everyone will eat you alive otherwise.
I mean, you've moved well up. I'm just having a look at the race Dubai, 73rd. You know, you're not that far away.
No, exactly. And that's what's so amazing. Because I felt so far away. And it's amazing in 1 week, all of a sudden you're back in it. And that's the joy of it, because it can change that quick.
I took a picture of you and your family last night on your phone at Heathrow Airport. Did you, celebrations, did you go to bed on the same day as you got up?
I did actually get changed. I didn't think I would get it. I was getting into the night clothes. I thought I would go to sleep, but I managed to ward off all those demons. We were quiet. I went to my parents and we had a few glasses of the lovely stuff and came back. And I watched a little bit of the coverage and just drifted away, if I'm brutally honest. I think I've got a number of things to do in the next 2 or 3 days, some dinners and some parties and friends, and I'm just trying to string it out as long as possible, I think.
For all the people that watched you battling those conditions yesterday and battled successfully, Richard Boxall's great tip over the years is in the breezy, swing it easy. What is the Anthony Wall go-to tip for playing in a heavy breeze?
For me, it was a prime example yesterday. I hit too much club on 14 and I pushed it right, and in 15... I played back foot and pushed my hands forward and committed to the club I wanted to hit. And I think that, for me, that's the secret. In that high wind, you've got to be 100% committed to the club you choose. And that's proved on 14. I wasn't committed and I left it outright. And in those winds, it really shows you up if you're not 100% committed to your shot. So really, it's all about commitment.
Well done, Anthony. A great win after all those years of sticking in there. And a tribute to how much staying power you've got. Terrific stuff.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
There's a big feel-good factor about that, Richard, isn't there? I feel good for Anthony.
I was pleased he won.
The most important thing, apart from the win for Anthony, is his move up the Race to Dubai. 73rd now, which gets him into the shake-up to make it into the final series. And that's exciting from a position where you are perhaps going to miss your card and rethinking everything. So that's brilliant, brilliant news for Anthony Wall. He goes to, as you said, Richard, 137th in the world golf rankings from 2, 3, 4. So a big move, almost 100 spots in 1 week. And he gains a European Tour exemption until the end, as a winner, by the way, in a winner's category, until the end of next season. So all these things are big cherries on the cake for Anthony Wall. Now let's hear from the runner-up, Alex Noren, who missed out on a Scottish double following his victory at Castle Stewart last month.
It was a struggle today with the wind. It was very tough and he played good and, you know, he didn't give me anything. And I think we were on the par at the end, which is, I mean, I would have taken that in a stroke play today, probably. And yeah, it's very sour not to win when you get close. Yeah.
And I suppose, in a way, Rich, if you're playing stroke play and you know you're leading by a shot or two, but there's half a dozen players behind you that could win. If one of them has a 65 or 64 in the final round, you don't win. You think, well, he kind of came from the pack and got past me. But in match play, you've just got to beat the one guy in front of you. You'd probably feel worse about losing the final.
Yes, I think you would. It's like you say, yeah, you've got to play the bloke. It's interesting to hear some of them, they say, do you play the course or do you play the player? Even whether it's windy or whether it's not windy. I mean, I always had to play the player.
I've got to play the course. Every time you play a golf course, you think, well, I don't see driver down this, so I see a long iron and I'll take a 6-iron in. I just don't see a driver. All of a sudden, you step up there and you hit a driver on a hole you don't want to hit it. You're not going to do that, are you?
It's about beating the bloke who's standing next to you.
But how do you do that? By scoring well on the golf course?
By being one less than him.
Yes, but how do you do that? You have to make a plan around.
You have to watch what he does. And if he knocks one out of bounds...
Well, I mean, if he rifles a tee shot, a driver straight down the hole you don't like driver on, you don't all of a sudden get a driver out, do you?
Might do.
Fair enough then, OK. So you play the guy.
Well, I always play the guy, yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly... It's a method that some players do use.
Yeah.
But most don't. Let's hear from Paul Laurie, because, you know, we have tournaments and it's really hard to find sponsors. It's really hard to find people who want to host tournaments. Paul Laurie's been involved in both sides of that and he's on the line right now. Paul, what was it like for you last week?
It went very well. Thank you, Robert. Everyone enjoyed the venue, especially, obviously, Archerfield Link. I think they pulled out all the stops for us. I mean, we go down there quite a lot, me and the boys, to have a bit of a hit about, and we've always enjoyed it. And I thought the venue was excellent. Everything was kind of in close proximity to each other. So for us, the venue was brilliant. The weather was great. And even yesterday's wind, I don't think that kind of took away anything from it. I think both of the boys were rounding about level par and there was some great golf on show.
Perfect match play course, Paul, wasn't it? Just under 7,000 yards.
Yeah, I think if you take a full stroke play event there, very similar to Merkur Link, I think the level of kind of golfer that we've got, it kind of get destroyed a wee bit unless there was a heavy wind. So ideal, again, for us. We shortened a couple of the holes to make them drivable par fours. Beautiful, beautiful layout. Great course. But if you take a full field there, then I think scoring would be pretty low. But match play, if it's 4-3 that's recorded, nobody knows that the guy was 8-under par or whatever.
And what feedback, Paul, did you get from the players during the week because they were playing match play, a little bit different from the ordinary?
Same as last year. Everyone absolutely loved it that played. I think there was a few guys that played this year that didn't play last year because they'd heard, you know, from players that it was a great event and it was well run. And I mean, players' lounge, I mean, everything. Honestly, I thought the whole thing was kind of really good. So from the players' point of view, the feedback has been very positive.
I thought it was pretty good, Paul. A good idea, I thought, to put a bit more sort of pressure on the lads, that the chap who went out in the first round got absolutely nothing.
Well, if you play a normal stroke play event, Richard, you play two rounds and get nothing.
I remember it well.
I'm sure you remember that well. I remember it well. I've been at many times myself, as we all have. So we only play one round and you get nothing. So it's actually a better event for people to play.
You're lucky now. You've seen both sides as a player and as a promoter or a host. What's it like from the other side of the fence where you were this week?
The other side of the fence is that a lot of the players just don't realise what goes into an event. And I would be one of those until last year when we ran the first one. I'm not saying there was the players were poor or the players were kind of moaning about this and that, but they don't realise the work that goes in behind the scenes and how hard it is to raise the kind of money that's needed to run a tournament. But apart from that, I mean, the players are great. They obviously, I think they like the format. They like its knockout match play in the middle of a long run of stroke play event. I think it ticks all the boxes for the players.
So what about the future for it, Paul? You're talking about it's hard, you know, to get people to raise the money and to back it. What's the future for the Paul Lawrie match play?
Well, we're committed. We've got one more year on the schedule minimum, and nobody from our side is thinking that that's going to stop. We've got a few ideas, obviously, and every year I think you can tinker with it a little bit and it'll just improve and it'll just get better. I think from a spectator's point of view, I think the spectator's village was unbelievably better this year than it was last year. So they addressed that hugely for sports. We're all learning, but we're open to suggestions. Nobody's saying that we know what we're doing and we're perfect. We're open for people to give us suggestions of what they think should happen.
And what a marvellous story at the end of it all, Paul, with Anthony Wall winning his second event on the European Tour after 16 or 17 years of a gap.
Unbelievable. Great champion for us. Obviously, no matter who's your champion, would have been proud and honoured to have them. But for Anthony to go so long between wins, and I've played with him a lot over the years, and I mean, he can really, really play. To go that long and only win once before is quite incredible, to be fair. So, great win for him. He was very emotional when he won. It's obviously 16 years and three or how many days it was. I mean, that's a long, long time when you're good at what you do. So, a great story.
Terrific story. Paul, thanks very much for all the time you gave us when you're actually up there running the event and for talking to us on the Race to Dubai show this morning.
Absolute pleasure.
Great guy, Paul Lawrie. And, you know, working for Sky Sports last week, he's always ready to give his time and his name's Chippy, and chip in whenever he can. Very, very good professional. A model pro, I would say.
Very much a model pro. It puts a lot back into the game.
I know that Paul Lawrie is definitely a giver, and well done to him. And every success to his tournament as well with Aberdeen Asset Management.
Yes, long may it continue.
Long may it continue, absolutely. In whatever guise it moves forward in, Richard.
Whichever direction it moves, yes.
Yeah.
You never know. There might be some changes.
Well, yeah, 1,000% behind it. It was really good. And what about Archerfield Links? Great venue.
I thought DJ Russell did a good job there. He designed that one, which was the Fidra Links we were playing. Or yeah. Not we, but the players were playing. And he did another one called, I think it's pronounced Dirleton.
Dirleton, yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he's designed an excellent... It's 6,978 yards, I think it is. And it's a very good club members course. It's perfect. Nice set out, but well bunkered.
Yeah. OK, Richard, slightly different this week. Can we have the top eight in the Aberdeen Asset Management Paul Lawrie match play, please?
OK, the top eight. The losing quarter-finalists were Max Kiefer, Hayden Porteous, Johan Carlsen and Alejandro Canizares. And then James Morrison beat Oliver Fisher 4-2 in the third and fourth playoff. And Anthony Wall, as we've just heard, beat Alex Norum 1-up in the final.
And in the fancy Race to Dubai tips, Jamie, in your absence, Richard, went for Richard Sterney, but he didn't play, Richard. So, nil point there for James Spence. I went for Alex Norum, who narrowly missed out by a one-hole loss, finished second.
I mean, seeded two, for crying out loud.
Is that a mistake, or have I done something illegal?
No, but when I go for somebody that's quite good...
Well, you'll get your
chance.
You'll get your chance in the Olympics. Very shortly, you'll get your chance. I bet you go for a rank outsider from Chinese Taipei. Not. We will see. In the fancy Race to Dubai game, Stuart Renton's Team One got over 845,000 points to top the weekly table with Anthony Wall as his captain and Alex Norren as vice-captain. That's just incredible. Well done, Stuart Rendon. I think we might have to get you on the show, actually. That's just remarkable. Thomas Edling is the game's overall leader, though. To pick your fancy team, just go to europeantour.com/myeuropeantour. Now, Richard, please, the top 10 in the Race to Dubai standings.
OK, your top 10 in the Race to Dubai standings. 10th is Sergio Garcia. Lee Westwood is 9th. 8th is Tyrrell Hatton. Chris Wood is 7th. Brandon Grace is 6th. 5th is Louis Oosthuizen. Rafa Cabrera Bayo is 4th. 3rd is Rory McIlroy. 2nd, Henrik Stenson. And still leading the way is Danny Willett.
Now, in other news, Europe's Ryder Cup captain Darren Clark has named Sam Torrance as his 5th vice-captain for the match against the US at Hazeltine National this September. The 62-year-old Scotsman will bring a wealth of experience, that is for sure. 8 consecutive Ryder Cups as a player between 1981 and 1995, including his famous curling putt. I remember this so well, like it was yesterday. Crossed the 18th green at the Belfry in 1985 to beat Andy North and secure the winning point for Europe. He was a winning captain at the Belfry in 2002. It's his third stint as a European vice-captain. He did the same thing for Paul McGinley 2 years ago. You can't be more steeped in Ryder Cup than he is.
No, I mean, but Sam's quite tactical, Sam. You know, you listen to him chat and he chats about, for argument's sake, just plucking one out of the air, Francesco Molinari. You know, he points out that, you know, he's so consistent off the tee. and to the green. It doesn't hold as many putts as I think he should hold Francesco Molinari, but, you know, for foursomes and fourball, why would you not want someone like that in the team?
That little cabal of captains and vice-captains circulate, so they keep imparting all their knowledge to the next captain.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's...
It's like they're never going to miss a trick.
Well, no, that's probably why we keep winning.
I think it's a big part of it. Yeah, we've definitely got like a European Tour boot room of vice-captains who become captains, who then go back to being vice-captains. How can you miss a trick? How can you not see something that you should have seen? Because they've all been successful and they've all done it all.
And if the captains aren't vice-captains, let's say that from the likes of Paul McGinley, I'm sure he'd be asked a few questions somewhere along the line for a bit of help.
Yeah, good luck, America. That's all I can say. Now, Joel Stalter claimed his maiden European Challenge Tour title in dramatic fashion, holding his nerve in the playoff to win the Swedish Challenge hosted by Robert Karlsson. You see Robert Karlsson giving something back. Paul Laurie doing it on the main tour, Robert Karlsson on the Challenge Tour, Thomas Bjorn's also done it on the Challenge Tour. I'm waiting for the Richard Boxall invitation, perhaps at Camberley Heath.
It might happen, Robert.
It might happen. It was the Frenchman's, getting back to Joel Stalter, it was the Frenchman's first professional win. He had to beat Wales's Oliver Farr and England's Ben Stowe at the second extra hole to get it done. Now, this is a story. Meanwhile, in the US, Jim Furyk became the first player in PGA Tour history to shoot a round of 58, achieving the feat at the Travelers Championship in Connecticut. The 46-year-old American hit a total of 10 birdies and an eagle to shoot 12 under par. Amazing. But at what point did he think something special was on the cards?
Started to maybe raise an eyebrow, holes 4, 5, and 6. I hit the ball really solid, really well. You know, I wasn't thinking about shooting in the 50s or anything like that. But then at 7, I almost holed the 9-iron. 8, hit a 4-iron, you know, less than 15 feet, knock that in, and then almost hold the wedge at 9. 7, 8, 9, I knew we had something special. And to go out and shoot 27 on the front, knowing that I got a par 35 on the back, you know, it's exciting. You know that you've got a good opportunity. But the mental battle really started after 12. Now I've got it 11 under par. I've got it in the 50s. You know, kind of the sky's the limit.
Well, Furyk was the last man to shoot 59 in the PGA Tour. So in terms of low round scored, Richard, he's gone 59-58. Ridiculous.
Oh, 58 is ridiculous. Well,
but, you know, if you birdie the last two, it's 56.
56, and that's never being beaten.
However, he didn't win the tournament. He finished fifth because the man that won was Russell Knox of Scotland, who held an amazing 12-footer at the last for a par to avoid a playoff and win his second event on the PGA Tour.
Everybody dreams of making a putt on the last hole to win a tournament, and I just kept telling myself, this is your chance to make a putt, to have a great celebration and hear the roars, and I'm glad it went in. By winning this tournament, it's put Dan Clark in a very difficult position not to pick me. If my points would have counted in Shanghai, and that puts me on the team, pretty hard position for him not to pick me if I would have made it, if I was a member. But like I said, I hope I'm on the team. I would love to be there. It would be a huge honour. Maybe holding nice putts like that obviously helps.
The scramble, as it always is every 2 years, for a Ryder Cup inclusion is incredible. And this from Russell Knox, a ride at a death, really, with the qualification period running out of time, makes life very interesting for Captain Clark. 5 rookies at the minute in. Yeah. Would you have a team where half of them were rookies?
I would, because I don't think it makes any difference nowadays. I think they're all top-quality good players. And if you've seen what they've done, you know, I know it's a Ryder Cup, I know it's pressure, but they can cope with it.
I think experiences can be undervalued. I think if you've got 5 rookies, that's an awful lot of rookies.
Listen,
you're going to pick Westwood and Keimer, aren't you?
I'd pick Westwood, yeah. I'd pick Russell Knox.
So you'd pick Russell Knox, Keimer and Westwood, so you have 6 rookies.
I think that's what I'd do, yeah.
The way I'm looking at it, if you're thinking Keimer and Westwood are in, because they're there or thereabouts and they have the experience that you want, it seems to be between Francesco Molinari and Russell Knox.
Yeah, I mean, you're convinced, aren't you, that Martin Keimer will be picked?
I think they're shoo-ins. I think Keimer and Westwood are close enough to the cutoff, and they bring a wealth of Ryder Cup experience. You would want those two guys in the team room. You can't have a voice if you've only just got there and you don't know what you're talking about.
I agree with
that. That's why you make Ian Poulter vice-captain.
Well,
and Sam Torrance and so on. That's why you do that.
Yeah, so do you not think there's your experience there?
But they're not leaders on the course, are they? I mean, the leaders on the course are...
Well, your leaders on the course will be Rory McIlroy, Henrik Stenson, Garcia.
As a rookie, you lean on those guys.
OK, but if you've got... So that you've got 5 rookies so far, haven't you? So if you have another one, that's 6. You've got...
That's half your team.
Yeah, I know. You've still got the other 6 to look after them.
I'm pretty sure that we've never had a team with 6 rookies in, ever.
It still looks pretty good, though, doesn't it? The standings are, as it stands, there's the European points list, there's 4 off that, and there's the world points list, there's 5 off that. And as it stands, it would be Rory McIlroy, Danny Willett, Henrik Stenson, Chris Wood, Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, Rafa Cabrera Bayo, Andy Sullivan, and Matthew Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, that's...
And three picks.
Yeah, it's five rookies. I've just double-checked as you went through it there. Captains have to make tough decisions. Russell Knox is playing some great golf. Maybe he's going to get an inclusion. Well, you want the late charger, don't you? You don't want a guy that's made all his points and has died off and doing nothing.
You started fading away in May. No.
No, you want the guy that's...
why, if you were Knox, you'd be gutted if you didn't get in right now.
We shall see. We'll find out soon enough. It's only a few weeks away, as you quite rightly said, Richard. Now, Richard, this week on the European Tour, there's a gap in the schedule because, for the first time in, 100 years, golf is in the Olympics. We have a lot of European Tour members going there. Before we discuss that, tell us the top 10 in the world rankings.
OK, number 10 is Brandon Grace. Danny Willett is 9th. Ricky Fowler is 8th. Adam Scott, 7th. 6th, Bubba Watson. 5th, Henrik Stenson. 4th, Rory McIlroy. Jordan Spieth, 3rd. Dustin Johnson is 2nd. And still leading is Jason Day.
Now, as said and discussed, this is the Olympic golfing week this week. They'll be competing at the new course that's been built in Rio. An incredible site where they've put the links. It really is quite superb. Jamie Spence, who was in your seat last week, Richard, has gone down to Rio, Team GB's Olympic golf team leader. And before he got on the plane, I spoke to him.
It's been a lot more work than I thought it was going to be, having volunteered for this role about nearly 2 years ago. It's been interesting with all the logistics.
So your manager, stroke captain, slash inspiration person, all that?
Slash coffee maker. Fortunately, I've got Nigel Tilley from the European Tour's physio unit. He's coming down as our physio and trainer as well for the team, which really, really helps, and an assistant to me as well, because Nigel was very keen to be involved. So I'm delighted he's going to be with me. We've got our strongest team, Justin and Rose Danny. And Danny Willett. Katrina Matthew and Charlie Hall both played well in the latest British Open recently. So Team GB have got one huge 17-storey apartment block for all of our team. So we'll be mixing with all the other athletes and hockey players and boxers and all the rest of it. So it's going to be a great experience for all of our players.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to see how you'll be bedecked. Will you have a shell suit on? Or
that is the worry, isn't it?
You know, normally, Jamie, it's golfing slacks, V-neck sweater and the perfectly pressed golf shirt. But I'm now seeing Team GB shell suit.
You are correct. The going away outfit is something I wouldn't be seeing, normally dead
just
in.
Just talk me through it, please.
I was trying on last Sunday. My kids are both absolutely falling around the floor
they're
laughing.
Horrified.
They are horrified. But there are some the odd polo shirt and chino, which I better wear, because it's obviously not made for me, Robert, as someone of my frame.
Your svelte, well-hidden abs. Oh, that's marvellous. So how do you think Team GB will do in the golf?
Well, I see Justin is definitely playing a lot better. Definitely. He had a good weekend at Baldur's Roll. He's been desperately keen to be here in Rio, so that's great. Danny's taken a bit of adjustment, I think, in getting used to wearing that green jacket. But again, I see signs of Danny coming back. I think he's got a putt a little bit better. I've followed him on course a few times.
That's normally his strong point.
Yeah, he's strange, isn't it? But I he's working hard again at his game, practising. And the two girls are really coming to form. And Charlie Hull needs a long, tough golf course because she hits the ball a long way.
She does, yeah.
She played Woburn, a home event there for the ladies. She's not played off the tees that they played off. She plays on the ones behind. So I think she wanted a longer test. So hopefully she'll get it down in Rio. Katrina, what a great effort from her to be in Rio at the age of 46. And she played fantastically well at Woburn.
But of course, that's Team GB. There's a whole host of European nations taking part, Richard. Just give us a flavour.
Well, I will. You've from Spain. Who've we got from Spain? You've got Garcia, Rafael Cabrera Bayo playing. And then from Denmark, to Bjorn Olesen, Søren Kjeldsen. You've got Nicholas Kolsarts, Thomas Peters from Belgium. Bernd Wiesberger, he's playing on his own, the Austrian. You can have, it's four players can play from each country as long as they're in the top, is it top 15?
Top 15,
of the world
yeah.
rankings.
Yeah.
So there won't be too many of them. Funnily enough, there is four from America, though. Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler, Patrick Reed and Matt Kuchar.
So how do you see it going then? I mean, the thought of normal professionals in a normal week have things to worry about, like, it's what exemptions am I going to get, how much money am I going to get and how many world ranking points am I going to get? All that is not an offer.
There is no cut. So they're playing for gold, silver and a bronze.
I have had this feeling, and it could be utter rubbish, all year long since January, thinking about the Olympics, I've had this uncontrollably powerful feeling that I know who the winner is
since
the start of the year.
Okay, who do you think it is?
My winner is...
Yeah.
Sergio Garcia. Now, the reason I think Sergio Garcia is going to win this...
I know why.
Oh, well, tell us then.
Because he's been very close in majors,
yeah,
and you think this is going to be...
I may not have a major, but I have got an Olympic gold medal.
Yeah, no, you could be right
there. I've had that feeling since the start of the year.
Cool. When you have a feeling, Robert.
Well, I had a feeling for Alex Noren last week, and that nearly worked out.
Well, maybe Sergio's going to get silver.
Do you have a feeling?
I have feelings, not for gold.
Well,
but I
mean, a lot of people talk about that and wonder if you've got feelings.
I've
but...
got feelings. I've got a feeling that... Hang on.
OK, let's come back to your feeling in a second. Let's hear from some of the players that are taking part, starting, first of all, with the world number five, Henrik Stenson.
Got some nice trophies in the game of golf, and I managed to get my hands on a few of them, and I think it would look pretty tidy on the trophy shelf with an Olympic medal next to it. Yeah, I'm just looking forward to being part of the Olympics, participating and seeing some other sports and get the feel for it, but at the same time I'm there to compete and I need to focus on my own things as well, but I'm sure there's going to be some times where you can enjoy the other parts too.
He's actually going to be my tip, Robert, Henrik Stenson.
Now, you lambasted me for picking Alex Noren last week, and you are now picking the highest-ranked player in the entire field. The feeling you had.
Yeah, I can't have him then. That's unfair. Let me just...
While you're still thinking, let's hear from Nicolas Kolsaerts. He's there with the Belgium team, but he's not the first Olympian, amazingly enough, from his family.
My great-grandfather was actually part of two Olympic Games. He was actually in the stadium in Munich when Jesse Owens... won, and our German friend left the stadium. So yeah, you know, I still have the old badges at home, and you know, Dad has always been sure that I knew about, you know, the Olympic pedigree in the family. So really looking forward to go.
Were you to win one of those medals, gold or another colour, what would you do with it?
Oh, it would be sitting probably in my dad's office, because I know it would actually make him very proud. I mean, I've seen a couple in people's offices, and it's actually a pretty cool thing.
I think that will be cool, but I think I have the answer, what to do with the gold medal. You would have to use it as a pro, as the world's most ostentatious ball marker. Let me just put down that gold medal.
It's in my back pocket.
What's that $2 coin you've got there? I'm just going to put down my Olympic gold medal behind the ball. Kolsaerts, played some good stuff lately, and it wouldn't surprise you if he won down there, would it?
No, it wouldn't. But, you know, I think it's going to go to... I think the gold medal is going to go to somebody that is reared in that part of the world. And I want to tell you now, Robert, that my feeling...
It's come upon you.
It's come upon me. I think Emiliano Grillo might have a very good
great
chance.
Great player.
Argentinian, young lad, good player, plays most of his golf now in the United States, but brought up on those sort of grasses, Robert.
The green... Grass,
you know, used to the grain. And
well, I think most players in our world travel, don't they? They've had experience of all the different grasses. I can't say that grass is going to be the deciding factor.
Well, you can't,
not for me, Richard, not for me.
You can't.
But you've picked a good one.
Yep.
Grillo is a really, really good player. Now, let's hear from Richard Green, because he's not made the Australian team, but he's still going to play an active part in the Rio Games.
I'm caddying for my fiancée, Marianne Skarpnord. She's with the Norwegian team, and she's been able to make the two spots. One of the two spots, her and Suzanne Pedersen are going. So, and I put my hand up a long time ago to caddy for her and go and be a part of it. I think it'll be a wonderful experience.
I take it this is a huge thrill, isn't it, to be a part of the Olympics, even if you're not playing yourself?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's always been one of my lifelong goals is to go to an Olympics, and I never really thought that I would compete there as a golfer, but to go there and caddy for Marianna and be a part of it, it'll be just fulfilling that dream, I guess.
I think the caddy should get a gold medal as well.
Oh, well, we'll see what happens. I have a funny feeling they won't.
Well, that's it for this week. We will review next week the Olympic men's golf competition and look ahead to the D+D Real Czech Masters. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news from the European Tour via Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat and Instagram. But for now, from Richard Boxall, who's gone for...
Emiliano Grillo.
And myself, Robert Lee, who thinks Sergio Garcia is going to be holding that gold medal on his chest at the end of this week. It's goodbye.